Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Samech Vav. We are in the Mishnah on the bottom of Samechem with Beis. We're continuing here in the sixth parak, and we are wrapping up. Between today and tomorrow, we finish Mirzah Hashem, the sixth parak of the Masechta. And we are continuing our discussion of what could be worn out into the Rishus Rabbim and what cannot be worn out into the Rishus Rabbim. And today, a fascinating discussion regarding prosthetics. The Mishnah starts off, Hakite Yotze Bekav Shalom. So we have an amputee, and he's going out on Shabbos, Bekav Shalom, and he's wearing a shoe. The shoe that's worn over here by the amputee, so to call it a prosthetic is somewhat misleading, because it is not exactly a prosthetic in the way that we normally visualize somebody who has an amputated leg who's wearing a prosthetic. Our general idea is that the actual prosthetic itself not only is there for the purposes of making him look like he has a full leg, but also it aids and facilitates the act of walking. Clearly in the Mishnah over here, and we'll make this point very clearly as we go through the Mishnah and the Rashi, clearly over here, the purpose of this shoe is not so much a prosthetic, but just simply for the first purpose, and that is just simply to give the appearance that he's got a full leg. It seems over here that in terms of what exactly was amputated, so it seems that it was just the foot that was amputated. And and basically what was fashioned was a wooden shoe that basically served as a shoe and also as a false foot. And the Mishnah is going to have a debate amongst the time whether or not a person can go out with it on Shabbos. So Akitei Yotze Bekav Shalom. So the Mishnah starts off with the position of Rebbe Meir, and that is that the amputee can in fact go out on Shabbos wearing this kav, wearing this false shoe. False shoe, false foot, whatever. I'm sorry. Let's call it a shoe, but it really serves as a false foot. And Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that it would be prohibited. Cannot go out with it on Shabbos. Rashi over here writes really succinctly on the very top of the Amud, Lav Tachshit Hu, because Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that it's not a Tachshit. It just simply does. It is not viewed as an article of clothing or as an accessory of clothing. Now, Rabbi Yossi's position is certainly a curiosity, meaning doesn't he need it for walking? And so what we'll say simply, and it seems to be the correct shot in the Mishnah, is that no. In other words, in this particular case, he doesn't need it for walking. And it will become clear and evident in the Mishnah that if something is necessary for the person to walk and it facilitates his walking, so that would be okay for him to go out on Shabbos. It must be over here that the shoe's purpose over here is strictly ornamental. And Rav Yossi is of the opinion that he does not view this false foot, this wooden shoe, as something which is ornamental. That seems to be the correct shot in terms of, and certainly within Rashi, in terms of what the purpose of the shoe is. And so we have now a debate between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi. V'im yesh lav beis kibbol ketutim tamei. Now the Mishnah goes on to say that if, let's say, this wooden foot has, let's say, a bit of a toch, it has a little bit of an insert, and it has the ability where you can put in it some sort of rags, shmatzas inside of it, so then it is going to be tummy. Now this requires a little more explanation as what just happened over here. Meaning we're talking about the same prosthetic foot, and now that it has a toch, now that it has an insert, and that you can put rags inside of it, so now it is going to be subject to tummy. What just happened over here? So let's take a look at that Rashi. Rashi tummy, Rashi three lines down, he writes, Mekabel tumas maga. So Rashi says now that this instrument, this item now, is going to be susceptible to tumah. Now let's remind ourselves that this prosthetic is made out of wood. And because it's made out of wood, so we operate with the following rules. And that when it comes to a wood kli, so it's only going to be mekabel tumah when it has a toch. We said this time and again throughout Shas, that a wooden kli that does not have a toch, it's what's called in halacha pshute kli eitz, so it's simply not going to be mekabel tumah. And Rashi writes over here, I'm going to read the Rashi inside Mekabel Tumas Maga, Val im ein lo ela beis kibbol rosh shoko, ve eino miniach sham ktitim, la beis kibbol tuma. So, v'hava le kubshute kli eitz, v'dumya desak, b'inan, she kibbol shalo, asu l'talta al yado, mash nosin l'socho. So Rashi says that if it does not have the insert in which the rags are put in, so it therefore has the status of pshute kli eitz, and as a wooden kli that does not have a toch inside of it, so therefore it's not going to be mekabel tumah. Now the question that probably you're thinking, and Rashi right away anticipates it at the end of this Rashi, is wait one second. Even if I don't put shmatas inside of it, isn't this person by definition putting his leg in it every single time? And isn't that by in itself considered now that the that this wooden shoe by definition has a toch, because what he does every morning is he inserts his stump into the shoe. So Rashi writes at the end of Ashoko, Eino mitatel al gabi akli. But when it comes to the shoke, when it comes to his stump that goes into it, so that is not considered tiltel al gabi akli. And probably what Rashi means is the following, that when we're talking about a wooden utensil, in order for its ability to be mekabel tumah, so it has to carry something else, meaning that the kli is fashioned in a way where it has a toch, it has an insert, and I put something in it, so now it carries it. But when it comes to the amputee who uses the shoe as his prosthetic, and even though, yes, he's inserting his stump into it, the item itself is not carrying the person. And it goes back to what I said in the beginning of the Mishnah. Meaning clearly over here, the way the Mishnah is viewing this particular shoe is that it is not there to support his weight. It is simply ornamental in nature. It just simply is there to give the appearance that he's got a full leg, he's got a full foot. And so it is not carrying him. He's just simply wearing it to give off an appearance that he has a full foot. And as a result of that, if the only thing that it serves to carry, so to say, I'm putting those words in quotes, is him, well, it's not really supporting him. And as a result of that, it is not going to be, it's not going to qualify as a toch, so that it now is susceptible to becoming tumah. However, once the insert is big enough, it's deep enough, where not only do I put in the stump of the amputee, but you also put in rags as well, oh, now it's there to support and carry the rags. That qualifies as a toch, so that it is going to be mekabel tumah. That's Rashi's understanding of the Mishnah. Continuing in the Mishnah, smucha shalal. Now here we're talking about the leather supports. Now here, if you have a picture, that'd be fantastic. Rashi over here, smucha shalal, Rashi describes it, smucha shal kita. Once again, we're going back to our amputee. Yesh kita b'shtei raglav. Rashi describes that he has amputated in both of his legs. Mahalacha shokava al arkavasav. So Rashi describes now that he's going to be walking on his stumps. Again, not clear from Rashi. The word shok just simply means the thigh. Not clear how much of the stump is remaining, but obviously a significant amount of stump, where he's walking now on his legs and on his knees. And now, so that his legs and knees don't drag on the ground, so now a leather padding is placed below him. So that now that serves basically as a way of protecting and allowing him to walk on the ground without dragging his stumps on the ground. The Mishnah says regarding the smuchos, so tmei medras, the subject of tumas medras, v'yotzim ben b'shabbos, and a person go out with it on Shabbos, v'nichnesim b'hem b'azara, and you can go into the temple courtyard with these items. So there are three halachas that we said regarding smuchos. Let's break it down. Let's discuss each one of these halachas separately. The first halacha is that subject to Tumas Medras. Okay, here we go. We have a discussion today regarding Tumas Medras. Tumas Medras is a unique transmission of Tumah. Unlike when we talk about regular Kabbalah Satumah, when I have a Kli and it comes into contact with an Avatumah, so it becomes Tumah, but as we've discussed time and again, it drops off a level. The degree of Tumah of the Kli is going to be a Rishon. If it comes into contact with an Av, it becomes a Rishon. However, when it comes to a Medras, when you have a Zav, a Zava, a Nida, or a Yoledis, the people who have an Avatumah, where the Tumah is Yotzei Megufo, the Tumah emanates from their body, so they now, when they sit on an item that is designated for sitting, or when they lie down on a bed, which is designated for as a bed, or in this particular case, when they're using something that services their weight, that is meant to hold their weight, so this item now qualifies as a medras, and now the transmission of tumah goes as follows. When the Zav rests his weight on an item that was meant for his weight, so the item now, this particular kli, is not only going to be mekabel tumah, but it's going to be the same degree of tumah as the Zav himself. That means to say that in our case over here, this smuchos, these paddings, are considered a kli, meant and designated for the weight of the Zav. As a result of that, now this smuchos are going to be not only tumah, but an avatumah, it's going to have the same degree of tumah as the Zav himself. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, yotzim ben b'shabbos. He can go out with it on Shabbos. Why? So Rashi writes over here super succinctly, detachshit didehu, because it's considered his accessory. Meaning basically, what are these things for him? They're shoes. They are the items in which it facilitates his walking. And again, as opposed to contrast that with the kaf, meaning the first item mentioned in the Mishnah, we were talking about a shoe, but its purpose was not for the purposes of walking. It was just simply there for giving an appearance of looking like a foot. And a debate amongst the Tanaim whether or not that could be qualified as a takshit or not. Over here, this actually is helping him walk. As a result of that, it's for sure going to be a takshit. And finally, the third halacha is that you can go into it, into the azara. What does this have to do with? So Rashi says this takes us back to brachos. Rashi writes over here, Dafagav Denam, we learned in the Mishnah in brachos, Lo yikanes adam, la harabais ben minalo, that a person is not allowed to go into the harabais with shoes. One of the degrees of Kedusha that is expressed regarding the harabais is that a person cannot go into the harabais wearing shoes, and shoes have to be removed. Every time you go into a makom kadosh, shoes have to be removed. We saw that when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu. So he gets to the Sneh, he is now within the Shechina, so the first thing he's instructed to do is take off his shoes. So when a person goes into the harabais, he has to take off his shoes. And the Mishnah over here is super interesting. The Mishnah says that these leather paddings that are used for the amputee do not have the status of shoes. Rashi writes it very clearly. Hanilav min al ninu, the lav berosh raglohein. These don't qualify as shoes because in order to qualify as shoes, they have to go at the end of your foot. These things do not go at the end of his foot. He has stumps. The stumps that are remaining do not have the status of feet. And so therefore, even though these paddings are allowing him to walk, and we could call them shoes, but as far as halacha is concerned, halacha does not view them as shoes. Halacha only views shoes are the things that go at the end of your feet. And so therefore, it doesn't qualify as a shoe per se. Consequently, this amputee is allowed to go into the harabais with this padding below him. So far in the Mishnah, we discussed a kav, we discussed the smuchos, and there's one more apparatus that we get to discuss in the Mishnah. As we continue now in the Mishnah, kisei v'samucha shalom. Here we're talking now about an amputee. It's not clear whether or not this particular person over here in this third apparatus is actually amputated, or it could just simply be that he no longer has the usage of his legs. In either way, what he now has is what is a kisei. Now, we could describe it as a wheelchair, but it's going to be clear in just a moment that they didn't think of a wheelchair. They didn't, or just simply, maybe they did. The Mishnah is not describing a wheelchair, but simply because his legs no longer service him. So in order for him to get around, he sits in a chair. Now, in terms of locomotion, in terms of getting him from one place to another, so he basically, with his arms that did have its full strength, so he would basically drag himself in this chair. It not only sounds a little bit archaic, it literally is archaic. I'm not saying it in a negative fashion, but nevertheless, we're now discussing the halachic aspects regarding this particular chair. So kisei v'smucho shelo, so you have this person who's sitting in the kisei, and also there are paddings as well. So the tamei medrash. So it's going to be subject to tamei medrash, ve'ein yotzei mem b'shabbos, ve'ein nechnasei mem b'azara. So once again, we discussed the three halachas that we discussed previously regarding the smuchos, but now we're discussing it in the context of this chair. So Rashi writes over here regarding the kisei, yesh kitei sheyevshu, v'kavtsu gidei shukav. Yeah, so Rashi, it certainly sounds like from Rashi that the legs are there. They're just simply, Rashi describes them being dried up, shriveled up. And v'afilu al arkav asav inu yachol leilech. And because he simply has no power, no strength left in his legs, he can't even walk on his thighs, on his knees. V'osin kimin kisei namoch. So Rashi describes a chair over here that goes low to the ground. And now, in terms of powering him to go forward, so he's got something that would resemble crutches that are by his arms, right? Rashi describes them as saf salim. So again, it's kind of hard to describe it, as Rashi over here does not come with illustration, but the power comes from his arms. This chair is tied to him. And so basically what he does is that with his arms, he pushes himself forward, and then he rests on the chair, and he continues that motion again and again. And there is not only the chair, but there's also the smuchos as well. Rashi describes the smuchos in this particular scenario, is that the padding, there's leather padding that is placed on the ends of his legs, And so as he's dragging, so the padding basically is there to protect his legs so that it does not, the legs do not directly drag on the ground. So three halachas that we're describing regarding this chair and the person. Number one, said the Mishnah, is that Tamei Medrash, that it's going to be subject to Tumas Medrash, and now we understand. Meaning Tumas Medrash because the item is built in order to support his weight. And since it's built to support his weight, so as a result of that, it is going to be subject to Tumas Medrash. Now, I could have made this point just a little bit earlier, but not too late to make this point. Tumas Medrash, when you have a Kli Eitz, even though it does not have a Toch, but as long as it is constructed for a purpose, and as long as it's built to serve and to support the weight of a Zav, even though it doesn't have a Toch, and even though, it's really interesting, it's not Mekabel Tumah, meaning as Kli Eitz, it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah, but because it is built to support the weight of a Zav, so therefore it is going to be subject to Tumas Medrash. This chair over here, whether it has a Toch or whether it does not have a Toch, you could argue either way, but even if it doesn't have a Toch, the point is that since it was there to support the weight of this Zav, so therefore it is going to be subject to Tumas Medrash. Next halacha of the Mishnah regarding the Kisei is that you are not allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. Now this is certainly a curiosity, because obviously it is there to provide him access to get around from place to place. And we were arguing earlier that if that's the purpose of it, so it should be qualified now as part and parcel of his dress. It should be a tachshit. So why can he not go out with it on Shabbos? If you look at Rashi again, so Rashi over here says, Rashi does struggle a little bit with this line of the Mishnah, this halacha of the Mishnah. So first Rashi quotes his Rebbeim, and his Rebbeim say, well, maybe the argument is that he doesn't need it so much. And Rashi himself balks at this argument because if this person does not have the strength in his legs, and the only way that he can get around is by using the chair and the crutches, obviously this is the way in which he needs to get around. And Rashi himself dismisses this pshat, and Rashi therefore gives his own pshat. And that is that it is not really connected to him, and it could very well be that just to get a little bit of rest and respite, so what he may end up doing is he may end up taking it off, and it may end up carrying it dal amas brishos harabim. So it's gzeira derabanan, for concern that you're going to end up taking it off and carrying the brishos harabim, therefore the chachamim prohibit him from using from taking it outside on Shabbos. And finally, that you can't go into it, into the azara. So this actually qualifies as a minhal, this qualifies as a shoe. Now again, that's an interesting contrast, because previously when we talked about the smuchos, when we talk about the padding that went under his knees, that did not qualify as a shoe, and over here, this chair and seemingly the crutches as well do in fact qualify as a shoe. Why should that be? So Rashi over here doesn't spell it out, but what we certainly could suggest is that previously we were talking about an amputee, and the padding was going on his knees or whatever stumps were remaining of his legs, and as Rashi himself said previously, that the only thing that qualifies as a shoe regarding this third halacha of not going into the azara is there has to be something that goes on to the bottom of your feet. And since the stumps we discussed previously, or the padding that we discussed previously, was not on the bottom of the feet, so therefore they don't halachically conform to the definition of being a shoe. Over here in this case with our chair, this person has his legs. It just happens to be that there's no strength in his legs, but he has it. And since this chair is basically servicing his full leg, including his feet, so therefore qualifies as a shoe. I'm suggesting that as a pshat. I do not know definitively if that's the right pshat, but that certainly is a way of approaching the Mishnah, and it may in fact be correct. Continuing in the Mishnah then ends off with a halacha which is unrelated, but basically as we end the perek over here, so the Mishnah is throwing out a couple of odds and ends in terms of halachas of what you can go out with on Shabbos and what you cannot. The lok tamin, it's a term that is unfamiliar to us. We do not know what it is, but we're going to be in excellent company, as the Gemara later on is going to wonder what that is as well. So the Mishnah is going to tell us two halachas when it comes to the lok tamin. Taharin, it is not subject to tumah, and ein yotzei mehem b'Shabbos, and you cannot go out with it on Shabbos. We will obviously understand the Mishnah a lot better when we learn together what lok tamin is, so let us wait till we get to the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to discuss and quite frankly deliberate exactly what the loktamim are. We start with the Gemara and we go back to the first ruling of our Mishnah regarding the Kav. We learned together in the first ruling of the Mishnah, the Kav is subject to a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, whether the amputee can go out with this wooden shoe. So Amalei Rav LeRav Nachman. So as we're going to be seeing now in the beginning of the Gemara, the Amoraim themselves had a little bit of ambiguity in terms of not what the Kav is, not the fact that there's a debate, it's just simply who took which position. We know there was a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and we're going to see together right now the Amoraim were just a little bit unclear who took which position. Amalei Rav LeRav Nachman Hechi Tanan. And the discussion opens up with a dialogue between Rav and Rav Nachman. Rav says to Rav Nachman, what's your version of the Mishnah? Amalei Lo Yadana, Rav Nachman says, I don't know. Now, remember, when you say I don't know can come in many different forms. It could be just a simple lack of knowledge, or it could just simply be unclarity, a lack of clarity on one particular point. As will become clear and evident in just a moment, the I don't know over here just simply means I don't know who said what in the Mishnah. Meaning, I know the Mishnah is talking about Kav, I know there's a debate between Rami and Rav Yossi, I just don't know which one said that it was Mut and which one says that it's Aser. And then follow-up question, Hilchas Amai, and who does Allah HaFa'al like? This is Rav still talking to Rav Nachman, and Amar Lei Lo Yadana, and to that he also said, once again, I don't know. Itmar, Amar Shmuel. So here we're going to start now with early Amoraim giving us their version of what in fact is the right girsa of the Mishnah. Ein Hakita. Now, Reshmuel says that the correct girsa of the Mishnah is Ein Hakita. Now, you look carefully back at the Mishnah. Turn back to the bottom of the previous Amud. So our version of the Mishnah is Kita Yotze, or Hakita Yotze Bekav Shelo Divrei Rav Meir. So the opening of the Mishnah is that Rav Meir is saying it in the positive that he can go out with the wooden shoe. Wooden shoe slash wooden foot. Shmuel's version of the Mishnah is no, Ein Hakita. V'chein Amar Rav Huna Ein Hakita, and Rav Huna also supports this as well. That the correct girsa of the Mishnah is Ein Hakita. Amar Rav Yosef Hova Amar Shmuel Ein Hakita. V'amar Rav Huna Ein Hakita. So Rav Yosef says, look, these are outstanding Amoraim and early Amoraim. And both Shmuel and Rav Huna are of the opinion that the correct girsa of the Mishnah is Ein Hakita. Ananami Nista Ein Hakita. So Rav Yosef says, fine, that's who we're going to follow. We're going to follow the shitas of Shmuel and Rav Huna, and that the correct girsa of the Mishnah is Ein Hakita, meaning the Rav Meir is taking the stringent viewpoint. Not the way we had the Mishnah presented to us, where Rav Meir was taking the lenient viewpoint. Maskala Rava Bar Shira Lo Shmia Lehu Ha Demasni Lehu Rav Chanan Bar Rav Lechia Bar Rav Kamei De Rav Bikituna De Bei Rav. So you didn't hear the way the Mishnah was said over by Rav Chanan Bar Rava, and he said it to Chia Bar Rav. He said it in front of Rav in Kituna. Kituna over here means like a small chamber. In the yeshiva of Rav. So, in a side room, often in the side of the yeshiva, this is how the Mishnah was presented. Ein Hakita Yosef Bekav Shelo Divrei Rav Meir, Rav Yossi Matir. So, the Mishnah was said over in the way that Shmuel said it, in the way that Rav Huna said it, not the way we had it presented in our Mishnah. Omach Vele Rav Epoch. Now, Rav, when he heard this version of the Mishnah, so he signaled with his hands and he said, basically, switch it around. You got everything right, but you got the names wrong. It's Rav Meir who's the Mekel, and it's Rav Yossi who's the Machmir. So basically, if you can just imagine with fingers, basically doing like a 180 with your fingers. Rav was basically signaling, flip it. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak, v'simancha samach samach. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, you want a simon? So the way to remember Rav's version, which by the way, we kind of figured that this was going to be the conclusion, in that this is the way the Mishnah ends up being presented. So although the Amoraim themselves went back and forth on the issue, our Mishnah gave us the concluding version, which is that Rav Meir is the Mekel. And the Gemara says, and if you want a mnemonic to help you remember, so just say to yourself, Rav Yossi with the Samach is the one who's Oser with the Samach. And if I can also add, Rav Meir with a Mem is the one who is Mekel. Okay, my addition for today. V'av Shmuel Hadarbe now. This is the version that the Gemara is going to settle on, our version of the Mishnah. And V'av Shmuel Hadarbe. And Shmuel himself also had charata. He was chozer, did not. How did Shmuel realize that our Mishnah and the way the machlokus is presented in our Mishnah is in fact the correct manner? Is because we're going to compare it with another Mishnah in Yevamos. The Mishnah over there says chalitza b'sandal shein hasholach. The mitzvah of chalitza, where the shoe is going to be removed off the right foot of the cholate. So the Mishnah over there says very clearly that it has to be done, the right shoe off of the right of the right foot of the cholate, the brother-in-law who does not want to do the mitzvah of Yibum, and therefore the mitzvah of Chalitza is to be done in order to break the Zika, to break the bond between the Yavam and the Yavama. And Chalitza B'Sanda Shein Shalom, if let's say the Chalitza was done with the shoe, is not actually owned by the Cholitz, or B'Sanda Shal Eitz, or if let's say it was done with a wooden sandal, Oshel Smol B'Yamin, or let's say the shoe, it was a left-footed shoe, that was placed on the right foot of the cholitz. In all these cases, chalitza kshera. The chalitza would be kshera. This is not the preferable way to do it, but nevertheless, b'di'evet it works. V'amrinan. Now, on this Mishnah and Yavamo, so additional comments. Man Tana. Who is the author of this Mishnah? And we're looking really at the middle halacha, and that is we're describing over here the wooden shoe. Man Tana, who is the author of this middle position of the Mishnah? Amar Shmuel, Rebbe Meir, he did not. So it's Shmuel teaching us now, emphasis on Shmuel. It's Shmuel teaching us that this is the Shita Ramer, did not, because we have a Mishnah in Shabbos. Not just any Mishnah, our Mishnah. Hakita Yotze Bekav Shalo, Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi Oser. That when it comes to the amputee, so he can go out with a wooden shoe on Shabbos, and Rabbi Yossi is Oser. What do the two halachas have to do one with another? So, the way Shmuel understands it, is that the question of our Mishnah here in Shabbos is whether or not a wooden shoe qualifies as a shoe. Meaning, is it considered a tachshit, or is it considered not a tachshit? Now, admittedly, it is a strange connection, because the Mishnah in Chalitza was talking about someone who had his full leg, his full foot, and it's just a question of whether or not a wood shoe can qualify as a shoe. A clog, I believe it's called. Whether or not that can qualify as a shoe. Over here, we're talking about somebody who's missing part of his foot, or his full foot, and the shoe is there to basically serve and replace his foot. So it's not the same, but the way Shmuel understands it, no, it is the same. Because basically the question is a simple and fundamental question, can a wooden shoe qualify as a shoe under any circumstance? And the way he understands it is that according to Rav Meir, the answer is yes, and according to Rav Yossi, the answer is going to be no. And so therefore, the way Shmuel understands it, The alignment now is going to be between the Shita of Rebbe Meir in that Mishnah Yavamos, meaning Shmuel is the one who is assigning that Mishnah Yavamos to the Shita of Rebbe Meir, is also going to conform to our Rebbe Meir, which is that a wooden shoe could in fact qualify as a shoe. Therefore, it will be kosher if it's done for the mitzvah of Chalitza, and therefore the amputee can go out with a wooden shoe on Shabbos. What did we just all learn together? That Shmuel's version is the way we have it, and not in the inverted version that he himself originally presented to us. The Gemara continues, "Vafer Rav Huna Hadarbei," and who else was in the camp of flipping around the Mishnah? Rav Huna as well. The Gemara now says Rav Huna himself also reversed himself and went with our version of the Mishnah. The Tanya we learned on a Braisa, Sandal Shel Sayadim. We're talking here about a sandal that was worn by a plasterer. Somebody who's in the profession of applying plaster. So it's Tamei Medras, V'isha, Choletzes Bo, V'yotzen Bo, V'shabes Divrei Rabbi Kiva, V'lo Hodulo. So Rabbi Kiva has three halachas to say regarding the sandal that was worn by the plaster. Rashi over here explains that what the plaster is going to do is that basically he's going to take his regular shoe and encase it in a layer around it. Kind of like galoshes, if you will. And according to Rabbi Akiva, for all intent and purposes, it has the status of a shoe. Rabbi Akiva said three halachas. Number one, it's Tumas Midras. Again, the whole purpose of it is to serve and carry the weight of the person that's wearing it. And so therefore, it's subject to Tumas Midras. Two, a woman can do the mitzvah of chalitza with it because it qualifies as a shoe. And three, you can go out with it on Shabbos. This is all Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint. V'lo hodulo. Now, when the Chachamim heard this viewpoint of Rabbi Kiva, they did not yield his position. They disagreed. V'hatanan hodulo. Now, we have another Mishnah, Braisa, that says that they did agree to Rabbi Kiva. So, I'm Rav Huna. Now, on this discrepancy between whether or not the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Kiva, they did not. So, Rav Huna now explains, man hodulo, Rabbi Meir. Who agrees with Rabbi Kiva? Rabbi Meir agrees with Rabbi Akiva. And the idea over here that expresses itself is that the way Rav Huna understands it, how we are aligning Rav Meir and Rabbi Akiva, is that because even though I'm using something that doesn't normally qualify as a shoe, meaning in our Mishnah we're talking about wood, to be made a shoe made up of wood. In the case of the plaster, so it's not clear whether it's made out of wood or not made out of wood. Not really clear what the material is, but it's abnormal. It's an abnormal material that nevertheless is used as shoes. So Rabbi Akiva says it's a shoe. Rav Meir agrees it's a shoe. So now, once again, you see that Rav Meir is ready to open up the definition of what is a shoe. And again, the whole point of this is to show us that Rav Huna, when he went with what is the correct girsa of our Mishnah, so he clearly went with the original girsa as presented in our Mishnah and not with the inverted version. So you see that Rav Huna himself also went back to the original position. And then the Gemara says, parenthetically, uman lo hodulo. And by the way, who wouldn't agree with Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Yossi, meaning obviously be Rabbi Yossi. Because Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah has just taught us that when I have a shoe that is made up of a composite of something that's not normally made for a shoe, so you can't go out with it on Shabbos, meaning it doesn't qualify as a shoe. And the plaster is galoshes, if you will, so they are not made up of shoe-like material, and therefore it does not qualify as a shoe, and so therefore he's going to disagree with Rabbi Akiva on all the halachas. It's not going to be subject to Tumas Medrus. A woman cannot do chalitza with it. You cannot go out with it on Shabbos. Amar Rav Yosef. Okay, now Rav Yosef over here says, man lahodulam. He also wants to identify who doesn't agree with Rabbi Akiva. So according to Rav Huna, we already have Rav Yossi taking the role of a Tana who doesn't agree with Rabbi Akiva. Rav Yosef would like to add another, or maybe he's arguing with Rav Huna, but it could just simply be that he's adding another Tana who doesn't agree with Rabbi Akiva, man lahodulo, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So it is the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. We have the following Mishnah, Ditnan. The Mishnah says, now in terms of the girsa, obviously it's a little bit of a question of what the right girsa is over here. You could see the Gon, who takes issue with the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Machatzel's hakash vishfoferes hakash. But basically we're talking about some sort of mat that's made out of straw, or a tube that's made out of straw. Rabbi Kiva matamid, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri mitahir. Rabbi Kiva says it's subject to Tumah. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that it is tahor. It is not going to be subject to tumah. And it is made out of reeds. And reeds very similar to wood. And so what we see over here is that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that when I have a something that is constructed out of wood. Now, what these reeds are made for, certainly not clear from the Mishnah itself. So but it seemingly... it was used for some sort of servicing. Okay, not perfectly clear, but anyway. But what we see over here, that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, because it's made out of reeds, so as a result of that, it's not mekabel tumah. And now what we just did is we aligned ourselves that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri are going to be the chachamim who don't agree with Rabbi Akiva, and who will not qualify a wooden shoe as a shoe. Amar Mar. We mentioned the galoshes that are worn by the plasterer. So Amar Mar, the Gemara just wants to go back to it for just a moment. Sando shosayen tamim medras halav lihiluche avde. Now the Gemara notes that the plasterer is not walking with these items, and despite the fact that obviously he puts them on while he's working, and obviously he's walking with them, but you can see Tosus over here making this point. And that is, yeah, but that's not walking with them. Meaning, if he's just putting them on while he's working, that's not considered walking with these shoes. See the Tosos, Divrei HaMaskil V'Halav L'Hilucha Aved. And if I'm just dropping right into that middle of the Tosos, V'Tireis Lo D'Sandos Shesayadim Lav Linol Asui. It's not really taking on the role of a shoe. Ela Echad Mikli Umnaso Shel Sayadinhu. It's almost like a tool of the trade. V'asui kein sandal. It just happens to look like a shoe. V'yachol ases raglo besochel in olo. Ach ein asui rak latoch bo es habayis. He only wears them on as he's working, as he's plastering the house. Upamim shenoa bo metayo bo ad sheyagil labeso. Well, that's Tosfos now giving away the answer of the Gemara. And now let me go run back to the Gemara, as we'll see the answer inside in the Gemara. So the Gemara's question, let's phrase the question and then we'll give the answer. We just saw it in Tosfos. And that is Sandra Shasayad and Tame Medras, Halabli Yulucha Avde. The Gemara says, but he's not using it for walking, and therefore it should not be Makabel Tumah. And therefore, how do we understand the Shita of Rabbi Akiva? So Amar Avacha Barav Ula, Shekinasai Mitayabo, Shemagila Besa. So the Gemara says is that when the job is over, sometimes what the plaster is not going to do is not going to take it off. Meaning, it serves as a level of comfort, maybe to a degree protects his other shoes, whatever. But he walks home with them. And since on occasion he walks home with them, so therefore Rabbi Akiva does in fact qualify it as a shoe. It functions as a shoe. Going on now, we're continuing in the Mishnah. We're up to the next part of the Mishnah where the Kav has an insert, and so therefore it holds rags. And if it holds rags, it's Mekabel Tumah. Now, we already explained this at length in the Mishnah. Amar Abaye. Tamei Tumas Meis, Ve'in Tamei Medras. And now the question is as follows. We certainly know in the Mishnah that once it has a toch, and once you put shmatas in them, so now it is Mekabel Tumah. What degree of Tumah? So Abaye says Tumas Meis, meaning that if you have a source of Tumah, Nava Tumah, he happens to give the example here of Meis. But if I have a source of Tumah coming into contact with it, or in the case of mace, it can be transmitted through oil as well. So then it's going to become tummy in the classic sense, meaning it now will receive the Tumah. It's not going to be an avatumah, it'll be a rishon the Tumah. The ain't tummy medras, but it's not going to be tummy tumas medras. Because this kav, as we've already discussed back in the Mishnah, is not there to support the weight of this person. It's just simply there to decorate the leg and give it the appearance that he's got a foot on it. But it is not supporting his weight, and therefore it's not subject to Tumas Medras. Rava Amar Af Tame Medras. Now Rava disagrees and says that it is going to be subject to Tumas Medras. Now Amar Rava Menam Minla. Now Rava says, I'm going to support my position, and I'm going to marshal the following as a support. Now we learned in the Mishnah. Agal Shel Katan Tamei Medras. That if I have a wagon, okay, and everyone here can be with me in terms of picturing the little red wagon. So if I have a wagon over here, the wagon is sometimes pushed by the child, and sometimes the child rides the wagon. So the Mishnah tells us it's Tamei Tumas Medras, that even though it doesn't always carry the weight of the child, only on occasion, nevertheless, it's going to be Tamei Tumas Medras. What Rav is trying to argue over here is that this kav, this wooden foot, this wooden prosthetic, he agrees that generally it's not there to bear the weight of the person wearing it. And most of the time it's there simply for ornamental purposes. Nevertheless, since at times it supports its weight, so therefore, just like the wagon, it's going to be subject to Tumas Medras. Abaye Amar, Hasam Samachilave, Hachalo Samachilave. Now Abaye's counter-argument is that when the child goes on the wagon by definition is supporting the weight of the child. But over here, in the wooden foot, it is never supporting it. Again, the purpose of this construction is just simply ornamental. Amar Abaye Manah Min Alach. Now Abaye says, now look, Rava, you brought a proof, I'm going to bring a proof. Detanya, we have the following brisa. Makil shows the kingdom Tara Miklum. That if I have a walking stick of an older person, it is not susceptible to Tum at all. It's made out of wood. It doesn't have a toch. So it's not a kli. What about the fact that it supports his weight and it's subject to Tumas Medras? So the brisa says very clearly, it's not subject to Tumas Medras. And what do you see over here? That even though the stick is at times going to support the weight of the person using it, nevertheless, just because it sometimes supports the weight, that's not enough to give it the definition of Medras. Rava's counter-argument to that, Rava, Hasam, over there, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, L'terutze Sugya Avidei. It's never used to support his weight. It is only there just to straighten his walk, his stride. And so in the case of the cane, it can't qualify as Tumas Medras because it's never there to support his weight. It's just to help him walk straight. Hacha, but over here, in the case of the wooden foot, Lismoch Ilavehu Da'avideh, that if this amputee is going to put his weight on the wooden foot, it's going to support all of his weight. V'samech alein, and he's actually going to put all of his weight on this one foot, and so therefore Rava counters and says that it is going to be subject to Tumas Medras. So the Gemara brings in a debate between Abaye and Rava as to whether or not when the wooden foot has a toch and now it is susceptible to tumah. What degree of tumah is it going to receive? Tumah, just standard tumah, right? The Gemara's example is tumah's mace, or is it going to qualify as tumah's medrash? A machlokus between Abai and Rava, and the machlokus is left open-ended. Tumah and medrash. We're now talking about the chair. Ein yotze mem meshabes ve'ein nechnas mem lazar. Regarding the chair, so I'm sorry, three halachas that we said regarding the chair. It's tamei medrash. You can't go out with it on Shabbos, and you can't go into the Azara with this chair. And we explained all of them back in the Mishnah. The Tanit Tanakame de Rabbi Yochanan, Nichnasem Bahen La Azara. Now, a Brisa was said over in Rabbi Yochanan describing the chair, and here in the Brisa's version, so the concluding halacha, the third halacha, is that the person can go into the Azara. So Amrale Anisha Naisha Choleses Bal. So Rabbi Yochanan says no. He says to the person saying over the Brisa, you have a corrupted version of the Brisa. Your version is not right. In fact, I'm of the opinion that a woman can do chalitza using this. Va'atamart nichnasin, meaning, now it's kind of hard to imagine how chalitza is done with this chair. It's probably because, once again, I don't have a great picture of what it looks like. But basically, it's a shoe. And as such, chalitza can be done with it. And you're going to now tell me that you are allowed to go into the Azara. Again, going back to that Mishnah Brachos, you can't wear shoes into the Azara. So Tani, so now Rav Yochanan instructs the Amora who's saying over the Brisa, now let's say correctly, Ein nechnasim behem la'azara, you're not allowed to go into the Azara. And we see this all the time, where the Brisas are set over in front of the Talmid Chachamim of the Amorayim, and if necessary, these Brisas get edited, and we just saw that happen. We just saw the Brisa get edited by Rav Yochanan. Luktamim tahora. And now, finally, the last point of the Mishnah, and that's the luktamim. The Mishnah told us two halachas when it comes to the luktamim. It's not mekabel tumah, and you can't go out with it on Shabbos. Again, helping us to understand the Mishnah, we first have to know what exactly that is. Amar Rabbi Abahu. So, I'm sorry, my luktamim. So, what are luktamim? So, Amar Rabbi Abahu, chamer de akpa. So, the first definition is, it is a wooden donkey. Now, this is a little bit difficult to try to illustrate. Rashi over here gives a short description of it. Chamor anisa b'ktafayim ha'leit sanim. Osen oso v'nira k'mo sh'brochev alav umvim kameno nikra. And Rashi has a French word to describe it. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, and certainly no way to define it. Rashi describes it basically as a clown's tool. A clown, as he's performing, so what he's going to have is basically some sort of wooden donkey. It's kind of like, in my mind, like riding a broomstick. But in terms of where it rests, it doesn't rest between the legs. It rests on the shoulders. It looks as though he's riding it. So apparently it wears on the shoulders and it drops down to between his legs. And it gives him the impression that he's riding a donkey. But it really is being resting on his shoulders. And I guess the key point over here is that because he is not actually putting his weight on it, but rather it's on his shoulders, so therefore it is not subject to tumah. And my best guess would be that Rashi over here is describing tumah's medrash. That's one explanation of what it is. Rapapa Amar Kishire. Rava Bar Papa Amar Kishire. Rava Bar Papa says that they are stilts that a person walks with. Rashi, when you're walking through a muddy area, so the stilts are used in order so that you're able to navigate through the muddy area. Rashi, however, says, I'm a little bit confused, because if we're talking about stilts, so I understand the pshute kliates, and they're not mekabel tumah, but Rashi says, but they are supporting his weight, and they are built for supporting his weight, and so why isn't it now going to be subject to tumah's medrash? Rashi leaves the question open-ended. The one tosus that we have on this amud responds to Rashi's question. You could see Tosos trying to respond to Rashi's question. The third explanation, Rava Bar Rav Huna Amar Parami. Rava Bar Rav Huna says that they are masks, the purpose of which, says Rashi, is that they're there to frighten off the children. Why are these masks necessary in order to frighten the children? Unclear. But that's his definition of luktamim. It's made out of wood. It's pshutikli eitz. It's not going to be mekabel tumah, and for pretty obvious reasons, you can't go out with it on Shabbos. Hard to describe this as being a tachshit. Continuing now to the next Mishnah. Habanim yotzim b'ksharim. So young men, boys, can go out with these kisharim. So right now we're just simply going to call them ties, knots. It's really not clear what we're describing right now in the Mishnah, but we know the Mishnah says that the boy can go out with it on Shabbos. B'nei malach mezugim. As far as the princes are concerned, they can go out with these golden bells, ornaments that were attached to their clothing. The truth of the matter, says the Mishnah, v'chol adam. Any person can go out with these small bells. Ela shedibur chachamim bahove. It just happens to be that the chachamim were describing the situation that was prominent in their time, that it happens to be the princess went out in this dress. The Gemara starts off, Mike Sharon. Okay, so the Mishnah just taught us that boys can go out with these knots, but obviously we have no idea what we're talking about. And so the Gemara looks to clarify. So the first attempt of the Gemara, Amar Adamari, Amar Rav Nachma Bar Baruch, Amar Rav Ashi Bar Avin, Amar Rav Yehuda, Kishurei is Pua. So the Kishurei we're describing over here is Pua. Okay, now, that helps the Gemara, and the Anshei HaGemara doesn't do much for us. Rashi describes over here, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Kosher B'Ksharim V'Tolim B'Tzavar. Now, Rashi describes it as some sort of herb, some sort of root. I don't know what it is, but what would be done, says Rashi, is that it would be tied in a knot, worn around the neck, and Rashi says that it was worn for the purposes of refuah. Rashi himself admits that he doesn't know what ailment this actually is going to help, but it's worn for refuah. Now, to the larger question, which I'll ask, but I'm not going to have a great answer, and that is that we have said many times that there is a gzera derabanan on Shabbos and one is not allowed to engage in refuah. Yet, at the same time, there are occasions like here where certain refuahs are, in fact, allowed on Shabbos. And I could just simply say that, well, this isn't taken orally, and so therefore this is not going to be subject to the gzera derabanan refuah, because the gzera derabanan of refuah is because you're going to take the spices and you're going to grind them up in order to ingest them. And you could suggest that, although I don't think that's really a correct answer, but certainly over here it works, but I don't think that answer is going to work universally. In all the other times where refuah is going to be prohibited, there are other occasions where refuah is prohibited, even though it's not ingested orally. Okay, so I raised the issue. I don't have a great answer. Amar Abaye, Amar Le'ein. And here now we begin with the Gemara, and a good part of the remaining part of today's Gemara is going to be discussing various remedies. So Abaye says that I was told by my mother, and time and again throughout Ch'as, we know that Abaye was an orphan. His mother, Rachmanus, was Nefteri, she passed away immediately after birth. And so a woman took in Abaye to raise him as her own. And he quotes her all the time. And he describes her as mom. And so his foster mother is, even though, despite the fact she was not the biological mother, but she was a wonderful mother to Abaye, and she gets a lot of play throughout Ch'as. Amar Le Amy was told by my mother, Tlasa Mukme. If there are three knots that are tied, what it's able to do is just simply contain the illness. Chamisha Masu. Now, if it's knotted five times, so that's going to heal. And Shiva Afil Lechshafim Ma'ale. Now, if it's knotted seven times, so it's not only going to heal the person, but it's even able to protect him from outside sorcery. Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov V'hu D'Lochazel LeShimsha V'Siara. Now, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says, yeah, so these knots made up of this particular herb, so that's only going to be good if it never came exposed to either the sun or the moon. V'Lochazel Mitra. And also, it can't get wet. It can't come into contact with rain. V'Loshmia LeKol Barzala. Also, it can't hear metal. If it hears metal, so then it's also going to lose its effectiveness. V'kal tarnagolasa, it can also not hear a rooster. V'kal nigre, and it cannot hear the sound of any kind of footsteps. Then and only then it's going to be effective. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak nafaputa bebira. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, okay, might as well throw it out. Meaning, if this is how sensitive and delicate it is, and it can't experience any of these items, it's impossible. Just throw it into a pit. My ear yabanim. Now the Gemara We just offered a first shot of what the ksharm is of the Mishnah. And we talk about some sort of herb that's knotted. Now the Gemara is going to challenge the basic shot of this Mishnah. Amram Nachman Yitzchak, I'm sorry. Ma'ir Yabanim. The Gemara starts off the questioning. If we're talking about something which is medicinal in nature and therapeutic, so why is this limited to only boys wearing it? I feel a banus nami. Girls also, they would want the same type of therapy, if in fact it works. And ma'ir Yikatanim, I feel gedolim nami. And why is the Mishnah talking about boys? Meaning, if this is a therapy that cures a particular ailment, so then adults would want it as well. Ella Mike Sharm, so the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to go and head in a different direction of, in terms of what the definition of the Mishnah is. Hihada Amar Avin Barhuna Amar Evchama Bar Gurya Ben Shiesh Gaguin Al Aviv. So the Gemara describes it as following. We're talking about a young boy who really is attached to his father. Emotionally attached to his father. So Nota Ritzu Mimin Al Shiyamin. And so what the father does is he takes off the shoelace off of his right foot, Vikoshala Bismolo, and ties it to the left hand of the boy. As a result of that, the boy will now be comforted, as he will have something that attaches him to his father emotionally. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak V'Siman Chatfilin. Now Rav Nachman Yitzchak says that if you want a great way to remember, the correct way to go about this procedure is that you think about tefillin. What we do with tefillin is that typically it is wrapped on the left arm. And so here also, the shoelace is going to be tied on the left hand of the child. Now, why does... By tefillin, I understand it's a mitzvah. And the instructions are very clear to put it on the left arm for someone who is right-handed. Why is it necessary to create this kind of emotional attachment between father and son, where it has to be put on the left as opposed to the right? Great question. I don't know the answer. V'chilufanta sakanta. Now, the Gemara is very strong about this. And that is that the... that if I were to reverse it and take the left shoelace and put it on the right arm, so the Gemara says that that actually poses a danger. What that danger is, cannot explain it, but again, this is a, the Gemara says that it would be emotionally distraught for the child if it was in fact reversed. Amar Avin Bar Huna, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, the Gemara now is going to be discussing other therapies, meaning we just discussed the emotional therapy provided for the boy who is attached to his father, and so the Gemara now is going to be giving other types of therapies. Cautionary word before we go further in the Gemara, and that is, every single time the Gemara gives us a therapy that was used in the time of the Gemara, so do not try this at home. I'm not saying this as a disclaimer. I'm being extraordinarily clear. Already it's brought down by many, in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch himself doesn't say this, but in the beginning of the halachos of Bikur Cholim, so it is brought down that we are not to try any of these therapies of the Gemara. They worked and they were effective in the time of the Gemara, and they are simply not effective now. Could not say it any clearer. They're not effective now, and so therefore we are cautioned. Although we're learning them, and it's part and parcel of Torah Shabbat Peh, and it's part of our tradition, nevertheless, do not try this at home. Amar Avin Barhuna Amar Av Chama Barguria Sechufi Kasa Atibur B'Shabbas Shapidami. You take a hot cup that is empty and invert it and put it on the stomach, and on Shabbos one is allowed to do that. And again, I know I could ask the question. It's a therapy, and it helps, and you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. And why are you allowed to do it on Shabbos? So my answer of oral ingestion is great. Again, as I point out, it's not always going to work. Amar Avin Barhuna Amar Av Chama Barguria Mutal Asuch Shemen Malach B'Shabbos. You could take oil and salt and put it into the palms of your hand and on your feet, and you could do so on Shabbos, and this is great. And what does it help? So it's a great Rashi. It helps when a person is in fact inebriated. And this is great for sobriety. Kihadra Ravuna mi bei Rav, v'rav mi bei Rabbi Chia. The Gemara actually describes people putting this into practice. So, v'Rabbi Chia mi bei Rabbi, kihavu mi basme. So it happens to be that these Amoraim got good and inebriated. Maisi Mishchal Milcha. So they took this composite of salt and oil. Vishaifaluhu Lagavyasa Didayu Vigavasa de Karayu the Amre. They would take it and they would rub it into their palms and into their soles, and they would say the following, Kihech did seal ha Mishicha, just like the oil, it got a lot thinner as it got spread onto the palms and onto the feet. So hopefully the effects of the alcohol will also thin out of this individual, meaning describing themselves. V'ilo. Now, let's say you don't have oil and salt, and right now you're in dire need of sobriety. So what do? Maisi shia didana v'shadile b'maya v'amar. So bring a seal of a barrel, soak it in water, and make the following incantation. Kihech delitzel ha'shia. Just like the seal itself is going to thin. The seals were, by the way, were made out of clay. So you rub, you put it into water, and it starts wearing out. So panasa. So once again, let the alcoholic's effect also start dissipating. Amar Avin Barhuna Amar of Chama Barguria Mutal Chanek B'Shabbos. So you're allowed to do a therapy called Chinuk Chanek. Now, literally, that means choking. Choking doesn't sound like much of a therapy. So it obviously is referring to not necessarily choking, but it almost looks like something which is chiropractic in nature. You look at Rashi over here, lechanek, misha nifriku chulyo shol mafrakis savaro, v'nofels begrono, tolen oso berosho, shiit savaro, nifshat v'doma lechanika. Rashi talks about something like stretching out the neck. It looks chiropractic in nature. And so you're allowed to do this on Shabbos. Amar Avin Barhun Amar of Chama Barguria. Okay, this is now our fourth therapy given to us by Avin Barhuna. Lufufa Yunuka Bishabashapidami. Putting a newborn into a wrap. And once again, it is helpful in terms of straightening him out. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. We'll add, obviously, the Mishnah here, not the Mishnah, the Gemara over here is not describing where it's for the purposes of Sakana. Obviously, I don't need the Gemara to tell us that. That's obvious. Over here, it must be that it's a benefit, but the infant doesn't absolutely need it, and still one is allowed to do that on Shabbos. Rapapa Masne Banim, Rav Zvid Masne Ben. What we have over here is a debate between Rapapa and Rav Zvid in terms of whether it's Banim in the plural or Ben in the singular. Now, this needs an explanation. The Gemara is about to give one. Rav Papa Masne Banim v'Tarvayu Masne Lu ba'Avin Barhuna. When he says Banim is because he learned like Avin Barhuna, meaning that the halachas of our Mishnah is that both in terms of alleviating the anxiety of the boy and the wrapping of the infant were taught to him, and so therefore he has it as Banim. And Rezvid Masni Ben, Kamaisi Masni Ba'Avin Bar Huna. And Vehai Masni Le Barava Babrachana. And the Rezvid, he had the Girsa as being Ben, because he only learned one halacha from Avin Bar Huna. The other halacha was taught to him by Rabba Babrachana. And so therefore, he has it only as singular. The Amar Rabba Babrachana, Lifufi Yinuka B'Shabbat Shabidami. It's the same halacha, it's just attributed to Rabba Babrachana that you're allowed to wrap the newborn. Amr Abai Amr Le'ein. Abai once again quotes his foster mother. Kol Minyan Bishma Di'ime. When making any incantation, use the mother's name. Kol Kitire Bismala. Knots are tied on the left arm. Amr Abai Amr Le'ein. Quoting once again his foster mother. Kol Minyan De Mefarshe Kid Mefarshe. When there's an incantation, how many times do you say it? As per the instructions. Udol Mefarshe Abin Mechad Zimne. And if there are no instructions, they'll say it over 41 times. Tanur Rabban and the Gemara continues with a Brisa Yotzim be'Evin Tekuma b'Shabbos. A person can go out on Shabbos with a particular type of stone, an Evin Tekuma. An Evin Tekuma, if you look at Rashi over here, Evin Shenosos Oso Nashim Ubros Shelo Yapilu. So this kind of stone was worn by pregnant women, says Rashi, and so that she will not miscarry. Mishum Rabbi Meir Amru Af B'Mishkal Evin Tekuma. If you don't have an Evin Tekuma, so you can go out with a counterweight, meaning that if you put the Evin Tekuma on the weight and you have something that bounces his weight, that would work as well. Veloshi hipilo. And we're not describing a woman who had, unfortunately, Rachmanis, a history of miscarrying. Ela shema tapil, even if this woman doesn't have a history. But nevertheless, there was an effective nature to the stone, and any woman who's pregnant can go out with it on Shabbos. Veloshi ibra, ela shemiti taber v'tapil. And furthermore, as preventative in nature, we're not even talking about a woman who's pregnant, but a woman who is in a possibility of becoming pregnant, so she can wear the stone out on Shabbos, because she may become pregnant, and this stone, in ways that I cannot explain, but the stone somehow affects and prevents her from a miscarriage. In terms of the counterweight is concerned, it has to be that the counterweight was in exactly a match for the Evan Tekoma. Now the Gemara here says, now does the effect of the Evan Tekoma apply not only to the counterweight, but how about the counterweight to the counterweight? So let's say we weighed exactly how much the Evan Tekoma is, and then we took the counterweight and we put it on the side of the scale, and we now took a third weight and we measured it against the counterweight. Would that work? Take with the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Amar Rabbi, just a little bit more for this morning. I know the hour is late, but let's just finish the daf. Amar Rabbi, Amar Le'aim. Once again, quoting his foster mother, Le'ishte Bas Yuma. Let's say you have a fever and it occurs on a daily basis. Lishkal Zuge Chivrasa. Take a white coin, V'leza L'Milchasa, and go and rub it with salt. V'litko Mitzkalei Milcha. And weighed against salt. Litzre v'chala de beit savar b'niri barka. And take the salt and tie it to your neck with a hair. V'ilo leisa if parshas derachim. Now, if that's not available, so what should you do is go to the crossroads. V'chichaz v'shimshana gamala de dari midi. And now you're going to see an ant carrying something that is much larger than the ant, because that's what ants do. Lishkalei v'lishtei be'gufta denachsha. So what you're going to do is now take the ant, put it into a copper tube, v'lishtamei be'avda, and seal it, be'avra, and seal it with lead, v'lechtamei be'shitzen gushpanake, seal it 60 times over, u'le borzule, shake it, v'lidre, and carry it, v'le malei, and say the following, tunchalei v'tunai alach. Your burden is now upon me, meaning I'm carrying you, and now you take my burden, meaning you take my ailment, my fever. Now the Gemara says, now how do you know that this ant has not been already used? And all you ended up picking was a used ant. So the correct way to say it is that my burden and your burden will be upon you. V'ilo. Meaning, now in this new and better version of the incantation, you're not going to take the burden of the ant, because the ant may have already been carrying somebody else's burden. The ilo, now if this is not available, lishkol kuzei charata, take a new kli cheres, v'lezel nahara, go to the river, v'le malei. And this is the incantation, nahara nahara, uzban kuzei damaya l'orcha de'iklele. Give me the requisite amount of water. V'lahadur shav zimne al reshe. Make a circle around the kli 7 times. V'lishtin la'achore. Take the water then and throw behind you. V'le malei. And the incantation says, Nahara nahara. Shkomai daftali. The water that you gave me to me. De'orcha de'iklali. And literally the way, but the fever that was given to me, biyuma asa biyuma azo, it came in that day, it should go away in that day, and that incantation is going to be of assistance. Let me remind all of us, don't try any of the above at home. These were effective in the time of the Gemara, but they're not effective now, and let's just quickly recap. In today's daf, we opened up with a mishnah regarding various instruments that were worn by a person who was an amputee. We talked about the kav, we talked about the smuchim, we talked about the kiseh. And we said over the halachas regarding whether or not you can go out with it on Shabbos, whether or not subject to tumas medras or tumah at all, and whether or not you can go into the azara, into the harabais, wearing these items. the questions of whether or not they qualify as shoes, whether or not they are considered a kli and are going to be mekabel tuma, whether or not they're made to bear the weight of the person and subject to tumas medrash. So that is what we discussed in the Mishnah. As far as the Gemara is concerned, the opening of the Gemara was a question of what is the correct nusach of the Mishnah. Rav Meir in our Mishnah was a mekel. Rav Yossi was a machmir. The Gemara ends off by saying that that is in fact the correct presentation of the Mesora. And the Gemara notes, really what is that issue over here, is that is a wooden shoe considered a shoe? Rav Meir says yes it is, and Rav Yossi says no it is not. The Gemara went on to discuss that if something is designed to sometimes carry your weight, is that going to be subject to Tumas Medrus? That is a machlokus between Abaye and Rava. Abaye takes the position that when something is only used to support your weight at times, it is not subject to Tumas Medrus. Rava, on the other hand, is of the opinion that when something is sometimes going to support your weight, it is going to be subject to Tumas Medrus. The Gemara, as we turn to the Amud Beis, describes the Mishnah's luktamin, what exactly that is, three opinions in the Gemara, exactly what it is. It is not going to be subject to Tumah because it is not used as a, to wear. But whatever definition it is, it serves other purposes, and it is not going to be subject to Tumas Medrus. And remember, Rashi had a difficult time with that second shot where we're describing stilts, because that obviously is looking to serve his weight. And I pointed you in the direction of Tosfos. And the second half of today's daf dealt with the ksharim, the knots, and it engendered a really long discussion in the Gemara regarding various remedies that were prevalent in the time of the Mishnah, in the time of the Gemara. What exactly the ksharim are, these knots, either they were some sort of remedy, some sort of herb that was used as a remedy as it was knotted and tied around the neck of the person, or the other possibility, says the Gemara, is that it was it created relief of the anxiety of a child who had a really strong attachment to his father. Once the Gemara described this way of relieving anxiety, so the Gemara used the opportunity to describe many other remedies that were prevalent in the time of the Gemara. We relieve this morning people from various ailments, including inebriation, right, chiropractic therapy, and a host of other types of preventing women from miscarriages, and a host of other therapies that were discussed in the course of this morning.